Now, when you walk into the ring for the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, good evening, people out there. I'll tell you what, we've got one heck of a show scheduled for you. If we can just get this guest, Sam said that the guy is not answering yet, but I'm not even going to tell you who he is until he comes on. But this is the year of our Lord. This is March the 16th, year of our Lord, 2019. We've got one heck of a show with you tonight. We have a fantastic co-host on tonight, Ike Baker. You people may know him. He's the chief operating officer for the League of the South, and he is rock solid. But anyway, before we take another step, we're going to do what we always do. Lee Cochran's getting ready to take off with a prayer, so people. So please bow your head while Lee goes to prayer.
Oh, yes. Dear God, please help us to expose evil and manipulation, and please help us, even though it looks hopeless, we know that since you sent your son Jesus, we have hope in all situations, and it's better to light a candle than curse the darkness, and please give us discrimination and discernment. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.
Thank you so much, Lee. Thank you very much. Well, like I say, we're still waiting on Tom Goodrich. He's supposed to be our guest tonight, and Sam's trying to get him up. We confirmed with him just yesterday. So if he didn't come on, we'll just have to wing it, folks. Okay. He's up. Well, I've just been informed that his wife's getting him, and I'm going to pull up his bio. You would not believe what he. Okay. Okay, let's see. Folks, I'm trying to pull his mic. Hang on 1 second, people. I'm going to pull his bio up. Okay, here we go. I've lost his bio in my phone. We'll go back and get him in a minute. But anyway, let me introduce Ike. Ike Baker is on tonight. He's going to be our chief co-host. What we're going to do, we're interviewing Tom, a.k.a. Mike Goodrich. And let me tell you what, he's been on PBS. He's been on he's been on the History Channel. I wish I hadn't lost his bio. I'm going to read his bio come hell or high water later on. But anyway, tonight what we're going to be interviewing him about is one of his big books he wrote, Hellstorm. That's not his superb. I'm glad the guest is here. But we're going to talk about him. Well, let me just go straight to our guest. Tom, how are you doing tonight, fella?
Hey, I'm doing excellent. How about yourself?
Well, we're doing great as usual. I'm about as tech savvy as a chimpanzee, and I had your bio here. I was so excited about it, and on my little dinky phone, in some kind of way, I lost it. But anyway, I've just told the people what we're going to talk about tonight is Hellstorm, and come hell or high water, we're going to get you back on another show. But look, I'm going to introduce you to somebody else. I have one of my loyal co-hosts. He's in with me to the studio tonight. I've been knowing Lee Cochran for over 10 years. We have fought more fights than I can count. But the guy who's going to drive the show tonight, he's a really intellectual fellow. He is the operations officer for the League of the South. Dr. Michael Hill speaks highly of him. That's good enough for anybody. Certainly good enough for me. So I want to introduce you right now to Ike Baker. Ike, well, if you will, say hello to Tom.
Tom, how are you this evening, sir? I want you to know I bought your book a couple of weeks ago and read it. Heartbreaking.
Well, thank you. Ike is the name, Ike, I'm sorry.
Ike, that's right.
Ike. Okay, well, I'm Mike, actually, so Ike and
okay,
Mike.
Okay, all right. That'll
but
be easy.
You can call me Tom, anything you want. But Ike, yeah, well, thanks for having the courage to read the book. A lot of people lack that, of course. But it's a very graphic book, as you can attest, I'm sure. But it's simply put, that's the way it happened. It's not the way we wanted it to have been, to play out. But that's the way it actually occurred during World War II. Not the way we heard it. We grew up, it sounds like we both have similar carbon dating, and we grew up with this idea that that was the greatest generation fighting the good war. And I think after reading the book, you'll agree with me that it certainly wasn't that. It was the opposite.
I completely agree with that, Mike, completely. I didn't mean to interrupt you at all, but I'd like to tell you the perspective that I read your book from. I've believed for an awfully long time that that was not the good war, that the wrong side won. And what was done to Germany by the Allied powers was it was a real war crime, not the kangaroo court war crimes that were charged at Nuremberg. Bomber Harris is the one who should have hung. Eisenhower, who was referred to in his senior year yearbook at West Point as the Swedish Jew, he allowed Henry Morgenthau to decimate Germany after they were defeated and had surrendered. The gist of your book was the conduct of the war up to the surrender and immediately thereafter. But what was done to Germany was the true war crime, Mike.
I agree. I didn't understand that until after I finished the book, after I finished researching and writing and rewriting the book. I did not really appreciate that. I was more or less going into the premise that it was the good war fought by the greatest generation, like I said, until I finished the book and read and just had all this inside of me, and I realized, wait a minute, there was nothing good about this war, and there was nothing great about the generation that fought it, the Americans, the British, the French, so on. No, it's just the opposite of what we've been told. But, you know, Ike, I think the importance of the book, I think, to, let's say, your lay reader, is that once they've read this book, once they realize the great lie they were told about World War II, then I think your average reader will say, well, what else have I been lied to about? And I think they'll search their soul and they'll say, well, Pearl Harbor, for starters, and 9/11, sarin gas, attacks in Syria, of course, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Whenever the government's involved in something like this, it does seem to be, when they say up, you think down. When they say right, you think left. And I think that's the way it is to this very day, unfortunately. So probably the importance of Hellstorm is to is to awaken people to what's really happening in this world. And yes, then it's something else that's very obvious about the book, at least to many people I've talked to, is that this war, instigated, of course, by Jews in 1933, this boycott of Germany, when they finally selected a leader, that is Hitler, to the chancellorship, someone who would put Germany first, not the bankers, not the rest of the world, but Germany. And that was the reason for the embargo, against Germany by Jewish leaders.
And Mike, we're going to a break right now, fella. Hold that thought. Okay. We're going right back to a break. And when we come back, right, I am going to read that bio, people. I just pulled it up, and I'm so impressed. The people have got to hear this bio. Hold on to your seats, people. This is one of the biggest guests we've had. I cannot believe we're getting the quality of guests we're getting. We'll be right back.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org. So, you love talk radio? Then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, It Ain't Gonna Happen, a book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled M-E-J.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
Well, people, we're going right back to our esteemed guest in just a minute. And I'm going to tell you, I want to back him up on something he said. I got this thing right here. It's called Auschwitz, The Final Count, an anthology edited by Vivian Bird, published by the Barnes Review. On the second page of this thing, we'll go back to the Daily Express. It was published in London. On March the 24th, 1933, the Daily Express says, the headline story was, Judea declares war on Germany. And that was, listen, that was March 24th, 1933, way, way before the actual shooting war came out. Okay, let's go back to you, Mike. Take off, buddy, and let's get going and talking about your book. And after you talk about your book for a while, we'll see what questions that Ike has for you.
Eddie, are you there?
Oh, yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, I have to apologize. I thought we were going to talk on Skype, and one of the reasons is I haven't been able to. You've been trying to communicate with me, but the problem at this end is that I don't even have a cell phone. That's my wife. And right now, like I said, I was assuming we were going to be on Skype, and so I'm trying to go from low tech to high tech in a brief moment. So bear with me, please. I had to put this on.
Well, you're doing great. You're coming through. Well, you're coming through like gangbusters. You're doing fine.
Well, so are you guys. So everything's pretty good so far. Let's see what happens.
You know what? I must apologize. I think I talked to you a couple of weeks ago, and I do mention you said something about Skype. I do mention. So it's my apology. I screwed that. I dropped that.
No.
But you're coming through great. We hear you fine.
That was my fault, brother. I screw up. I just assumed it was Skype. And that's one reason why I should have been able to communicate with you, but I couldn't because my wife works. She has a phone with her. I have nothing here. So anyway, that out of the way. Well, did you have a question when I got back on? It seemed like I was getting...
No, sir, I had no questions. I just wanted to go to your book, take off on your book, because I know you said your voice wears down in about an hour. All your voice will hold up.
Yeah.
So take off. Tell us on this book. I've been looking forward to this book, Hellstorm. And listen, don't paint it as graphic. Don't leave out one drop of blood. And keep the go. And then when you go for a while, I'll hand the ball off to Ike and let Ike ask any questions he has, because Ike's going to be pretty much driving this interview.
All right. Okay.
So go ahead. Go ahead.
question, I guess, was about the graphic nature of the book. Yeah, it's graphic, all right, and it's there for a very good reason, because I want people to remember it. I want people to remember what was done to Germany and her people. I don't want anybody forgetting it. It's not enough to say someone was killed or someone was tortured to death or someone was raped to death. I want people to know what that's all about, and I think I succeeded. And I'm getting a lot of scratching on this end. Is this my fault or a lot of...
Sam, if it gets too bad, Sam is a wizard at taking that out. So it's not really disturbing me any at all right now. So go ahead. Okay. Don't worry about that.
All right.
Just do the best you can.
I'll make a comment, if I may, and maybe we can sort of drive the discussion from there just a little bit, Mike. First off, I agree with you 110%. What was done to Germany is a true crime. It was as barbaric as anything that the Mongol hordes had ever done in the centuries prior. As a matter of fact, we know that it was Mongol hordes by way of the Red Army who did commit a lot of these crimes. But what I'd like to do, if you're agreeable, and your book touches on this a great deal, is go back to whose feet this all lays at. Yes, it was the Allied militaries that did this. But they did it at the behest of international Jewry. I think we can all be intellectually honest about that. Germany was an economic miracle in the 1930s. Hitler had created a new monetary system for Germany called the Labor Treasury Note. He outlawed usury. That was a capital crime. He created a new Deutschmark that was backed strictly by productive German physical labor and intellectual production. He cut out the cancerous international banking cabal. It was a blueprint to shatter what was then the nascent New World Order, and the Rothschild cabal was about to be out on their asses in more countries than just Germany. So international Jewry had to burn Germany from end to end to stop this financial revolution from taking part on an international scale, because the whole world was watching the German economy as it took off like a rocket after these parasitic bankers were deleted from the equation. In fact, I'll walk right out on the thin ice. The Holocaust myth exists strictly to detract people from Germany's economic miracle in the pre-war years. How would you address what I just said, Mike?
I'd agree with you. In fact, it's working. You're right. It's been the preoccupation ever since the war has been over 70 years is the so-called Jewish Holocaust. It's hard to read the truth of what really happened when you've got that in the back of your brain. Once you put that out of your brain, though, which I have quite a few years ago, then it's easy to see what this is all about. Yes. It's a deliberate attempt to extirpate, exterminate, annihilate Germany and her people. And guess what? Next up is all of us Europeans, not only in Europe, but in America, Canada, throughout the white world in general. And that's probably the plan they had all along, was take out the best nation in Europe, the freest nation in Europe, and take them out utterly. And then, of course, project their crimes back on the defeated enemy. And then the rest becomes fairly easy up until this point right now. Of course, no one anticipated the Internet and the instant communication we could suddenly have, because back then, almost all lines of communication were in Jewish hands. We're talking radio, newspaper, movies, Hollywood, of course. Well, that changed. Nobody anticipated that. And that's the reason we're on the winning side right now. That's the reason we are winning and are going to win. Is because now we have the lines of communication open. And guess what? Our mere conversation right now is proof of that.
That's right. And our people are becoming what I've heard called J-woke. I think we all grasp that. Jew-woke. Yep. Woke to who they are, what they're doing. I'm going to trust both you fellows are probably familiar with Bishop Richard Williamson. He was excommunicated by the Pope because he trod on what is truly the real religion of this soul-sick culture. The real religion is the Holocaust. You can blaspheme Jesus Christ. You can put a crucifix in a jar of urine and call it art. But in many countries around the world, as we know, and I understand I'm preaching to the choir here, if you so much as question any of the details about the Holocaust, you're in prison. Look at Monica Schaefer. That's her name, right? The very elderly woman.
She's been a guest on this show.
2-year prison sentence. For questioning the Holocaust, you know, so they've armored themselves up, you know?
Yeah. We're going back again. A lot of this stuff is residual from, like I said, the end of World War II. They won the war. They could do anything they want with the defeated enemy.
That's right.
Project all of their crimes upon the enemy. And guess what? Then they pull out the Holocaust, and that puts a lot of sympathy in the Jewish side, the side that started the war, continued the war, and then continued the peace, so-called peace, war by other means, absolutely, actually.
Right.
But by the way, when you mention Monica Schaefer, don't forget her brother, Alfred. He's also in prison, too.
But if I might just interrupt this for a minute, I'm really proud.
It's interesting and reassuring to talk to people who know the same thing I do. In other words, we're debating with one another on, it's not a debate at all. It's an understanding.
But perhaps some people listening right now
that just aren't aware of not only what went on 70 years ago, but what's going on now because of what went on 70 years ago. By the way, I think that's another line most people will draw when they finally finish this book and other great books out there on this subject.
Yes.
Is that this is the recipe for the rest of us. It's a disaster waiting to happen. But again, we're fighting night and day to stop that. And I know the League of the South has been doing their bit and has had many other groups. And that's the reason we're seeing such repression, such censorship, such flagrant.
Mike, we're getting ready to go to a break now. And here's the music. When we come back, I would like you to let us know what are some of these atrocities, these horrible atrocities, and describe them in detail that were done to the German people during the Second World War. And also, I'd like to let you know, we're very proud we had Monica Schaefer on. She's been a guest on our show twice. Well, when we come back, just keep that question alive, and we'll be right back in a minute. We'll go right back to you.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
New Zealand's Prime Minister says Friday's deadly attack on two mosques can only be described as a terrorist attack. Three people have been arrested and one man has been charged with murder. At least 49 people were killed and many others were wounded in the mass shooting. President of the Security Studies Group, Jim Hansen, on this terrorist attack.
It's horrific. It's hard to even imagine the mentality that decides I want to not just slaughter a bunch of people because of my obscene beliefs, but I want to broadcast that to the world in the hopes of creating a race war, which was his avowed goal. And I think it's horrific.
Police in Milwaukee, Wisconsin believe they found the body of a 2-year-old missing girl. Saturday, Milwaukee Police Chief Alfonso Morales announced what could be Nolani Robinson's remains were found wrapped in a blanket near a Minnesota highway. Police have the father in custody as he is a suspect in both deaths. This is USA Radio News.
It's amazing but true. When it comes to one of America's biggest household expenditures, health care, a lot of people think they've got no choice. People are used to thinking we have to do it this way, but they don't. Yes, you have the freedom to choose an alternative with your health care. It's MediShare, and it costs way less than the alternatives. The typical family saves $500 a month, not a year, a month. And if you're single, this can save you a lot, too. And let's face it, a big reason MediShare is 400,000 people strong, it just works. They've shared over $3 billion in medical bills, so they can help share your needs, too. Joining MediShare for so many people is one of those things that makes you say, why didn't I do this before? So yes, the time has come for something better. Look into joining MediShare and see why so many people are opting out of the old way and into the new. Why not look into this? Just call 855-90-PSALM. That's 855-90-PSALM. 855-90-PSALM.
The CDC is reminding people it's not too late to get your flu shot and that cases of influenza are still increasing across the country. ABC News medical correspondent Dr. Jennifer Ashton joins ABC's Good Morning America with the numbers.
The CDC are now estimating as many as 26 million cases of the flu this season, just under an estimated 350,000 hospitalizations and an estimated 30,000+ deaths.
A new study says social media may be causing a rise in mental health disorders in teenagers. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports.
The study finds the amount of U.S. teenagers and young adults who experienced mental distress, depression, and suicidal thoughts rose significantly over the last 10 years. The researchers say there was an especially large spike in 2011, and they cite that as the year that social media emerged in a big way. The study was published by the American Psychological Association.
USA Radio News.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
All right, people, we're right back. We're going to go right back to our guest, our dynamite guest with this interview, Hellstorm. Before we went to the break, Mike, I was going to ask you, tell us two things before we go back to Ike. What were some of the worst atrocities committed to the Germans by the Allies in the Bengals Russians? And what were some of the worst cover-ups? Go ahead and go with that. And when you get through with that, then Ike will chime in with any questions he has. So take off, Mike.
Okay, I'll probably just go rather linear as they occur in the book itself, and probably, for starters, the firebombing of virtually every German city over a certain population, let's say 20,000. I don't have any definite stats on this, but virtually every town and city in Germany was firebombed by the Americans and the Brits. This is long after the war has been won by the Allies, so to speak. This is 1944, 1945, the deliberate attempt to destroy every German city and everybody living in those German cities, living in the rubble, so to speak. All the cities by this late date, 44, 45, have been utterly destroyed. All their industry has been forced underground. And so the British, with Bomber Harris, that was his name, in control of the RAF, and Winston Churchill, of course, was right behind it and actually encouraging it all. They went to work on Germany itself. That is the deliberate attempt to kill every man, woman, and child in every German city and in many German towns and sometimes in many German villages. Firebombing. It is. You know, we hear a lot about the nuclear attacks on Japan, rightly so. But very little is ever said about what happened to Germany, the burning to death of people because you want to, because you're going to win the war. You know they are. There's not going to be anybody around to accuse you of war crimes. So why not have some fun in the war and try to kill every man, woman, and child in the process? Firebombing is not typical bombing, as we've seen in movies of high explosives hitting towns, destroying buildings. This is what it involves is the fleets of bombers coming overhead, dropping their payload. First, they'll send down high explosives just to re-break up the kindling. In other words, spread it around even further. And then later, maybe 2 or 3 hours later, when the rescue crews are trying to rescue people, when the victims themselves, the ones who have survived the first bombing run, are coming out trying to find lost loved ones, trying to find a way out of this terrible mess they're in the city, then that's when the other planes come in with thousands upon thousands. Dresden itself had over 500,000 incendiary bombs dropped on it. Hamburg, the same situation. These are small, relatively small bombs that ignite upon contact. They're filled with, in some cases, phosphorus. In other cases, an early form of napalm, a jellified gasoline product, and they ignite everything they touch. Everything. Copper roofs, burning buildings, buildings that are made out of wood generally, and people themselves. And you can just well imagine the hideous nightmare that was occurred each time these firebombing raids occurred. The roofs melted on people trying to escape the fires. People were overcome and got stuck in asphalt, fleeing along. The city was so hot, and so they were stuck in the asphalt on their hands and knees and exploded into flames. Virtually everything is destroyed in these firebombing raids. This occurred all throughout Germany, by the way, not just the most famous, that is Dresden, but to Hamburg, Munich, Berlin. Any city in Germany was, all cities in Germany were firebombed. That is a high war crime. There is no justification for it. The mere fact that the Allies knew they were going to win, though, is their reason for doing this. Nobody was going to call them to task. It's only been recently, since David Irving wrote his seminal work on the firebombing of Dresden, that the world started becoming aware of what just exactly what the Allies were doing to Germany. And then people like myself come along and add a little something to the picture, hopefully. But no, that would have been more than enough to ensure that every Allied leader would have been hung after the war, this type of operation. Now, that I can go on about that, about how people they found when rescue workers did finally come into the city that was finally finished burning and cooling off, they found some of the most terrible things you ever could imagine, including people in certain cellars, 20, 100 people, 500, had just simply rendered down into liquefied fat, a dark, terrible liquid that people talk about wading through to try to find their way through there, up 6 inches up to their ankles. And by the way, I won't go off on Japan right now because my most recent book is called Summer 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. And it talks about some of the things I'm talking about right now. It occurred in Germany, but also what was going on in Japan. And virtually the same thing was occurring in Japan. But after firebombing raids, I don't know. You can take your pick. To me, personally, I think the massive rapes are the greatest war crime, in my opinion. Now, originally, when I wrote Hellstorm, I didn't have as much information as when I wrote the most recent book, Summer 1945. I thought the massive rapes, some of which most of us have heard about, certainly many of us listening to this program, but I think even some of the documentaries bring this out, some of the ones that are sanitized for the general viewer. We put all blame on the Eastern Front, where the Soviets came in, because, yes, they were not only allowed to rape women on the Eastern Front as they came into Germany, but they were encouraged to do it by people like Ilya Ehrenberg, a Jewish propagandist that urged the frontline soldiers with pamphlets and leaflets dropped from airplanes to do their damned dead level worst once they got into Germany. I'm quoting from my memory, which isn't so hot, but one of the pamphlets said, "Kill, you red soldiers, kill. There is no one in Germany innocent, be he alive or be he unborn. Kill. Take the women for yourselves. Break their racial pride. After you have finished with her, kill her also. Kill, my red soldiers, kill." These type of encouragement from a government functionary, somebody who was a spokesperson for Stalin, you might say, a propagandist, you can imagine what 18-year-old to 20-year-old Russian soldiers, quite backward and primitive, by the way, because they had come from a communist rule, which dumbed them down, just like it's trying to do in America right now. And so a lot of them acted out in their worst fantasies, because actually they were being encouraged to do this. In Russia, on the Eastern Front, Germans fighting against the Russians, it was one of the most horrible things you could imagine, because yes, they did do that. They raped every chance they got, and then often they killed the women after they had done this. What I mean by it's probably my worst war crime in my mind, as far as what happened in World War II, is that those women who weren't killed, they were killed just as surely as if they had been murdered physically, because spiritually they were killed. They were murdered. There's no way a woman can. When I'm talking about rapes, too, a lot of folks have this idea about rapes being something private between one man, one woman, off in a dark corner somewhere. It's a terrible thing to happen to her, but it's a very private thing. That's not it. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a terrible situation where a public is demanded, an audience, a crowd, to watch this spectacle of a woman being raped to death by 100 soldiers on a broad, in the broad daylight, in a city park, and people forced to watch, not just the relatives. That was special. That was reserved especially for the family. They loved to see that. That is, the commissars, the Jewish commissars who came along behind. These are political officers who will put a bullet in anybody's head who doesn't agree with them, including their own soldiers. But yes, this to me is such an abomination. There's words, English words, we have not invented yet to describe this situation. And let me just give you an example. I'll try to slow it down a little bit. I know I'm speaking pretty quickly. I've actually got to get off the phone in not too many more minutes, but around 6 my time. When the Russians would enter a town, they would, the combat troops, the white Russian soldiers, would generally drink what they could find, but mostly they were actually fairly well-behaved, the frontline soldiers, because don't forget, frontline soldiers are very concerned about getting a bullet right between the eyes. They're more concerned about staying alive than they are about stealing things or getting drunk or raping any number of women. And that's the way it is with every army.
Mike, we're going to a break right now. This is, I'm just totally spellbound. When we come back, we'll go right back to Ike, and I'm gonna ask Ike a question when we come back, and then Ike can take off with it. People, hang on to your seat. Be right back. We've got Mike just for a few more minutes because his voice wears down. So hang on, we'll be right back.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Getting the kids to school, cleaning the house, doing the laundry. It seems that the work routine as a stay-at-home mom is never ending. And even though I'm the prime grocery shopper in our family of four, I simply don't have time to scrutinize all the labels on the countless food products I buy. Oh, sure, I've noticed all the latest certification seals. Organic, non-GMO, gluten-free. It definitely seems to be the latest craze. But it was only recently that kosher certification seals caught my attention. You see, my husband had me download an app called Kosher-tify, and it shed light on a century-old certification industry that slipped under the radar screen from the majority of our public. I also noticed a question mark at the end of the app name, and that makes great sense as there's far more questions regarding this industry than answers. In fact, the developers refer to this as the kosher question. Sure, I'm a busy mom and didn't pay attention to our food culture, but now I have transparency, a convenient grocery list feature, and the ability to eat in favor of my family's best interests, and you can discover it too at thekosherquestion.com.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped-up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Yes, indeed. Well, people, thank you so much for hanging on. We're going to go right back now. We're going to give our esteemed guest a little break because his voice wears down easily, he told me. We've got him about 15 more minutes, all we've got him. We're going to go back to Ike now. And I'm sure Ike has plenty of questions, but I'm going to ask Ike a question or two, then I'll get him to take off with any answer my question, any question he wants to ask our other guests. But Ike, let me ask you this, friend. You know, the world could not have that could not have gone unknown by the higher ups. And I'm talking about who above General Eisenhower. And you were correct in his West Point yearbook. It's they referred to him as the Swedish Jew. Would you say this was a war between Gentile, white European Gentiles, and the Jews of the world?
Absolutely.
And who knew about that? Who sicked them on? And I'm gonna shut up and go to you.
Now, who knew about it? On the Soviet side, it was officially sanctioned, like Mike said a few minutes ago. Ilya Ehrenberg, there's a name I'd heard before. Word got back to Stalin, actually, that this was going on and that this might besmirch the honor of the Red Army. So rather than put a stop to the activities, Stalin just completely squashed any exposure of it whatsoever from the Soviet sector. Now, in the Allied sectors, there were rapes also, not at the fever pitch of the Soviet sector. I think we've all seen that piece of video out there. As a matter of fact, I think it's titled Hellstorm. It shows a woman on the side of the road, a German woman, who's obviously in a daze as an American armored column goes by, and one of the troops hands her some rations or something. And what I always thought had happened to her is that she's probably been gang raped and violated in every sort of way. And what Mike was saying about these gang rapes by the Soviets, I knew someone years ago who was a young girl when Germany was conquered. They lived across the street from me when I was a young guy, and I sat at their kitchen table, and I heard about these things 45 years ago, okay, from two people, Carl and Anka. They're passed, but out of respect for their kids, I'm not going to say their last name. I saw Anka's mother's Mutterkreuz, her mother's cross, and they told me these stories firsthand. The gang rapes committed by the Soviets, the Mongol troops that the Red Army contains were turned loose in the German cities, in the German countryside, and they were officially encouraged to take German women as war booty. And they raped every female from age 8 to 80. They would rape them to death. There was all kinds of deaths after that. There weren't as many childbirths as you may imagine because these women resorted to fairly primitive abortion methods. The statistics I've read are anywhere from several hundred thousand up to possibly 2 million rapes took place in the Soviet sector. Now, who allowed these things to happen on the Allied side? Well, FDR's Secretary of the Treasury was a Jew named Henry Morgenthau. And Henry Morgenthau wrote a document called the Morgenthau Plan. And the Morgenthau Plan basically deindustrialized Germany, stripped the Ruhr Valley, the German industrial region, of all the factories, all the means of production. At Tehran, the big conference between Churchill, Roosevelt, and Stalin, they wouldn't allow the Germans to have a watchmaking industry or a metal furniture industry on the grounds that those could easily be converted to war production. So the idea that there was some sort of official sanction for the abuse of the German citizens, I don't think that's much of a reach. And if you couple that with the open-air POW camps where possibly as many as 400,000 German soldiers, surrendered German soldiers, were starved to death and left to die of exposure in the elements. Listen, our government is the greatest war criminal. It's certainly as bad as the Soviets. I was going to say the worst in the picture, but the Soviets were pretty darn bad.
I agree.
So, you know, who sanctioned it? I think it was sanctioned right from the top, because let's be honest, we've been an occupied government for a long time, not as openly 70 years ago as we are now. But the idea that the Morgenthau Plan and Bernard Baruch's filthy Semitic hands were all over this, this was done to destroy Germany. And it's like I said a few minutes ago, a little bit ago, it was done to destroy Germany because Germany was going to take away the trough for the Jew bankers. And war was declared on Germany by international Jewry. And by getting the entire industrialized world to join together to fight Germany, Germany was defeated. It took the whole world to do it, but but they did it.
Sure
they
did.
Were defeated and broken. And look where they're at now.
The Morgenthau Plan, that's very, very few people know about the Morgenthau Plan. Thank goodness somebody like yourself seems to understand World War II history the way it really was, not the way we wanted it to be. But the Morgenthau Plan, basically, what you're saying is correct, with a lot of emphasis elsewhere, too. It was an attempt, it was a deliberate attempt to destroy utterly Germany and her people.
That's right.
To make it go away.
And Mike, JCS 1067, which superseded that, was even worse. Joint Chief of Staff document 1067. That was actually a plan put forth to starve the German public. They were put on a ration of about 1,050 to 1,150 calories per day.
Germany was on the verge of starvation even before the war was declared over. They were so effective had been the Allied control of the air that there was just nothing moving in Germany. No food, no medicine, no clothing. And I'm talking about all the roads, rails, and rivers. Basically, they stopped moving. And that's a lot of the bodies you see packed in these railway cars. When they when the U.S. allies rolled through there, they blamed it on the Germans that these were Jews. But absolutely was not. It was in many cases, it was Germans themselves. But, I want to go back a little bit and something you said about the American attitude in the West as they moved through. Was somewhat perhaps more benign or lighter, a lighter touch than perhaps the Soviets. I've got to tell you, Ike, I don't think so anymore. When I wrote Hellstorm, I would have agreed with you. But since I wrote this last book, Summer 1945, I don't think there was any real distinction. I think it was almost as bad. The only difference is that Americans had a greater capacity for covering it up than the Soviets did. The Americans had bought propagandists traveling with them, hundreds of American journalists, and they had their marching orders. The quicker they adhered to the rule, the regulations of Eisenhower and everybody that worked their way down, the main officers. In other words, it's something like this: Allies all good, Germans all bad, and that's the way they were supposed to report the so-called news. It was simply propaganda, and so we don't get a lot of information. But I've got a couple of great accounts that would indicate that the raping of German women in the West may have been nearly or perhaps even worse, for all I know, I wasn't there, as it was on the Eastern Front. I'm very serious about this. I know how hideous that may be, that sounds, but the Americans, I've got accounts of them standing in line to rape women. I've got accounts of them, of their officers encouraging it, turning the other cheek, or, like I said, encouraging it, American officers forcing German homeowners to put the names and ages of everybody inside their home, and you can imagine what that was for.
I've got
so many accounts of that now, and it was so pervasive. In fact, I've got one account of a woman in Berlin, near Berlin. When they knew the Russians were coming through, they prepared for the worst. They thought, oh, yeah, here we go. The Russians, in this case at least, the white Russians, actually were very kind and considerate and didn't touch anything. And guess what? The Americans came through and raped the woman almost to death, the same woman who was talking about this. She never did recover from it. So there we have, I'm not sure. I don't think we can give the Americans any break. Back to Eisenhower, the overall commander. Everything he's saying about that man is true. He never heard a bullet fired in anger. He was a desk general. He was a political appointment. In fact, his hatred of Germany was... there's so many notes and letters he wrote to his wife, Mamie. God, I hate the Germans, and how he wishes he could kill more of them. You know, here we have the world's greatest bloodbath, and when the war is officially over, that is the so-called peace, Eisenhower said, I wish we could have kept going and killed even more. The world's greatest bloodbath, he hadn't got his fill, but you're right. You mentioned something about helpless, disarmed German POWs. I've heard accounts, and I accept most of these accounts because they're coming from great sources, and anywhere from 800,000 to 1.5 million armed German POWs were, after the war, allowed by Eisenhower to starve to death or die of dehydration, even though rivers ran beyond their barbed wire, or to die from actual murder or lack of medicine, lack of shelter.
Hey, Mike. Mike, we're about to run out of time. Before we run out of time, I want to ask you So to recap again, go back exactly what was the best method that the Allies had, and maybe not so much the Russians, how exactly, overall, how did they cover all this up? What would be the number one method, system they use to cover up these atrocities? And why have they been so successful covering up this? Well, listen, we've hit the end of the hour, Mike. That's it. I know your voice is wearing out. We had you scheduled for this 1 hour. Mike, well, I'll be getting back with you. Hopefully we can get you back on the show. We can finish up where we left off. But thank you so much for coming on tonight. And maybe next time I'll get to read your bio. I'm such a klutz.
Mike, why don't you come to the League of the South Conference this summer? I'm sure Eddie can tell you how to get there.
Amen.
Eddie, anytime you want me, just call me again, and we'll try to get this sorted out. But Ike, thanks for pitching in, man. I can learn some things from you, I think.
Hey, I can learn some things from you, too. I look forward to meeting you someday.
That's why we handpicked Mike. And we handpicked Ike. Well, people, what a hell of an interview. Hold on. Mike's got to go. Ike's got to stay. It's going to be me, Lee, and Ike in the second hour. Be right back, folks.